There is 1 week left, and the Major League Baseball is getting spicy.
It's the final week of the regular season, and we are looking ahead and looking back at a wild weekend of action. Oh my gosh, it's Monday, and the postseason is almost here. It's Baseball Barbercast. Let's do it.
Hello, and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that sufficiently met the Mets. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. I just spent 7 straight days at Citi Field and didn't even see Mrs. Met once.
Are there any Mets left to meet after a week straight at old Citi Field? I feel like you really, really made the most of your time there. And by the way, it seems like the way they're playing, you might find yourself back there again sometime soon.
It's probably a good thing that I met so many of the Mets. Yes, those New York Mets, the magic in Queens is ablaze. They take 3 out of 4 from the Philadelphia Phillies. That was just one of many incredible baseball happenings we had over the weekend. There is 1 week left to go in the regular season, and thank God we have real races. There was a point where we were worried that as things got down to the wire, wouldn't it be particularly interesting? That is not the case.
That is not the case. And normally on our weekend recap shows, you know, we organize it by sweeps and mops and all stuff like that. But now we're just going to go league by league. We'll start with the NL. We'll take a break, do the AL, and then we'll I guess we do have some real news. We'll hit the Reds firing David Bell on the back half of the show. But yeah, I mean, at this point, we're pulling up the standings and we are going team by team here because, as you mentioned, I mean, just the fact that we are now in the last week and the Philadelphia Phillies have not clinched the division because of the Mets. I mean, just that sentence alone, even a month ago, let alone 3 months ago, is pretty mind-blowing and really sets up an extremely fun week of action, particularly during these next few weekdays when we have multiple divisional series that could have massive, massive implications.
This image really exemplifies the wonkiness of where we're at, okay? So I'm watching Phillies Mets at Citi Field last night, and I'm thinking about the Braves, and I'm thinking about a Braves fan sitting there at home watching Sunday Night Baseball, cheering Bryce Harper on to beat the Mets. Can you have imagined being in this position? So fascinating. But that is indeed where we're at. The Mets took 3 out of 4 from the Phillies.
Let's start there.
Let's
you were there. That is a good place to start, not just because of the standings, but because you were there, because it was Sunday Night Baseball. We had some big moments. So you take us through what you saw in person, and then we'll bounce around the rest of the NL.
Thursday, Taijuan Walker, bad. Mets kick his butt. Friday, Phillies obliterate David Peterson and win big. Saturday was the biggest Citi Field crowd of the year. 5th biggest Citi Field crowd in regular season history. And boy, it felt like it. Sean Manaea is nails. Mets put a bunch of runs up late on Orion Kerkering, and they take that game. That set up a really lovely showcase on Sunday Night Baseball. Zach Wheeler, who is likely to finish 2nd in the NL Cy Young, against Tyler McGill, the man lovingly referred to as Big Drip. That is indeed his nickname. And McGill, Frankenstein combination of Tyler McGill, Phil Maton, Jose Buto, and Edwin Diaz outpitched Zach Wheeler. The Mets won 2-1 on a Brandon Nimmo solo home run in the 6th inning. Edwin Diaz locking things down with 2 innings, throwing like 31 pitches.
Yeah.
Striking out Cody Clemens to end it. I want to talk about Edwin Diaz because I think he exemplifies this second half Mets resurgence. Let's turn the clock back, right? Edwin Diaz signs this massive contract with the Mets after an unbelievable 2022. Everyone is singing Narco, that, you know, the song Timmy Trumpets is at Citi Field losing his mind. Signs a big deal. Tears his ACL in the WBC during a celebration. Wonky, unforgettable, infamous. Comes back this season and is bad for 2 months. Has a 5.50 ERA on May 19th after a 4-run blow up in Miami. in the locker room after the game, he is reported to have broke down in tears. Okay. That is what the Mets were in May.
Yeah.
They were, they had the essence of breaking down in tears. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to now, Edwin Diaz comes out for the eighth inning on Sunday Night Baseball to face the top of the Phillies order. He strikes out Schwarber, strikes out Harper, gets out of the eighth, 11 pitches, comes back out for the ninth, and gets the two-inning save one day after getting four outs. Right? This was abnormal. Yeah. This was Mets manager Carlos Mendoza pushing the envelope, pushing the issue to get a win his team needed.
A couple things about Diaz. So, yeah, I mean, he had mentioned it. Mendoza talked about afterwards how he had some quote being like, you know, we've been careful with him all year. And now it's time to, I don't know, what did he say? Time to be a big boy. What did he,
the quote was amazing. I was in the room. Yeah. He was like, we've been careful with him all year, but now it's big boy time.
It's big boy time. Big boy
it's
time.
Big boy yeah, time. So, and so, you know, I was going around to all the writers afterwards and just being like,
hey,
do you know what time it is?
Oh, it's big boy.
It's big boy o'clock.
So I was watching this game and I thought that this was, let's bring Diaz in for the top of the order in the eighth, and then we'll go to someone else in the ninth after we get past, you know, the Phillies' best hitters. And when they sent him back out for the ninth, I was like, okay, he didn't throw too many pitches in the eighth, but you could tell his command was already basically gone as soon as the ninth inning started. Like, his fastball career was gone. And in the past few weeks, he'd only walked one batter in the last, like, I think 10 or 11 outings. So, like, it had been improving. He'd certainly been much better recently. But this is the thing with Diaz, and this is still true. I love the guy. Again, one of my favorite closers ever. Of course, his time with the Mariners. Like, I love Edwin, the person. Like, I root all this. However, like, it can go very fast. And you could see it was starting to slip. And yet they stuck with him, and he managed to. We got the Mendoza mound visit. We love that. The manager mound visit, non-pitching change that is so rare in Major League Baseball. He locks back in and strikes out Cody Clemens after walking Brandon Marsh on four non-competitive pitches. It was an awesome moment. And we'll see. You know, Diaz has said, I'll be ready Tuesday. We'll see if that's actually true. But it was a really, really special night for Mets fans, obviously.
And if you want to read a little bit more about it, I wrote about it over at Yahoo Sports, how Diaz said, I find it so interesting when closers have to go back out for a second inning, because so much about the ninth inning experience is feeding off that adrenaline. And when you get the third out of the eighth inning and you have to go back out there for the ninth, maintaining that intensity in between those innings is so difficult. It's so hard. And Diaz said he just didn't sit down and he was just pacing through the clubhouse in the tunnel the entire time before he went back out through the ninth. And then also go look at the numbers of the hitters he faced in the ninth inning against him career. Real Muto, Stott, and Castellanos all kind of kick his butt.
Mm.
And Real Muto hit a walk-off single against him last week in Philly. He would not have faced Schwarber. Just a little nitty-gritty thing there.
Schwarber.
Cody Clemens is the nine-hole hitter, he strikes him out. Schwarber was on deck. Ryan Stanek was hot in the bullpen. Stanek would have gotten Schwarber. He would not have faced Schwarber a second time. But unbelievable show from Diaz. There was the goodbye, kind of, maybe, who knows, to Pete Alonso, who will be a free agent this winter. I personally think that he's going to come back. That's my two cents. I also think that the Mets are going to play another home game this year in the playoffs. Mets fans gave him a standing O. That was very cool. Pete proceeded to strike out three times and not reach base, which is always great. Like, he came up with a big spot and grounded into a fielder's choice. Like, he just didn't rise to the moment in this particular instance.
Yeah. And Pete, right, it is a kind of an awkward, but like understandable. I don't blame Mets fans for handling it this way, but like, you don't want Pete to just be like, see, like, adios, I'm gone. Like, I'll never see you again. Like, that's obviously not what he's thinking for a multitude of reasons.
This happened last year during the playoffs with Aaron Nola in the Phillies. And then here we are.
Yes, that's true. And that's the postseason's a little bit different. But anyway, we will see if the Mets will play another game at Citi Field, as you mentioned. Absolutely packed. I know there had been some Citi Field attendance discourse over the last few weeks. When they needed to show up, they absolutely showed up. It looked like an incredible atmosphere. And we'll see if we get another one of those games.
The coolest crowd moment last night was Diaz coming out for the eighth. Because the Mets make the last out in the bottom of the seventh. And then the lights cut. And the first notes of Narcos start playing. And the fans are not expecting Diaz to come out in the eighth inning. Now, I know he's coming because I have binoculars. You know, I can see that he's warming up.
Oh, look at this guy. Look at Mr. Beat Writer over here.
But there was this moment, lights cut, Narco plays. Like, I would say at least 10,000 people were not expecting Edwin Diaz to run out in the eighth. And that was super, super cool. One quick thing on Francisco Lindor.
Sure.
This is one of my favorite phrases. He performed baseball activities on Sunday.
Performed. All right.
Engaged performed in baseball or participated? Activities. Participated in baseball activities. Mm-hmm. Here's my two cents. He did not look particularly comfortable in doing so.
Which he admitted after the game. Asked like, hey, dude, so are you going to come back and play for this team that's, you know, trying to make the postseason? And he's like, yeah, I would really like to. It's going to hurt. He said, I don't anticipate playing pain-free anymore this season. But which it was the kind of quote where I was both encouraged and discouraged because he was very honest, which we appreciate transparency with injuries. But also it's like, okay, like he will not be at 100%. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not isn't capable of helping them, but it is both something that he will have to be managing and something where it's like you just have to wonder and be concerned about, like, if it's going to happen again. Like, that is just blatant risk. I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. I don't blame him for trying. And yeah. It's great, but like, this is still will be a storyline. This is not let's wait for it to be. This is why it's news, right? This is not an injury where it's like, I just have to wait and then I'll be fine and I'll be 100%. I'll get to go. That is not the case here.
If this was June, he'd be on the IL. Not even a question. I mean, he was in a t-shirt in the dugout. He was not wearing a uniform. He's an active player.
Yeah, like, which means he's not close to pinch running or pinch hitting. Like, and we're running out of time with the regular season. And obviously every Mets game is important. And now as they head to Atlanta, we'll flip it to Atlanta here in a second. You know, we said when we had this conversation a week ago, it was like, all right, well, he doesn't have to play against the Nets. Oh, maybe he'll play against the Phillies. Well, hopefully he'll have to be back against the Braves. Doesn't seem like they're going to have him against the Braves, but we'll see.
Yes. Now, I asked Carlos Mendoza in the presser over the weekend, is Lindor's availability in any way tied to the size of the gap your team has over the Braves, right? In the event that they had entered this Atlanta series down a game, would they have just shot Lindor's backup with painkillers and just rolled him out there? You know what I mean? And he said more or less, no, Francisco Lindor is Francisco Lindor. And if he thinks he can play, he will play. Right. Now, I think that is partially true. I do think there's an element of urgency that's involved. And given that the Mets have a 2-game lead, I don't think Lindor will play in the opener. Almost certainly. The Mets, two of their hottest hitters have been Luis Angel Acuña and Jose Iglesias, who are playing up the middle. And so it's not as dire as maybe we thought it would be. I think if Lindor comes back, he would DH in one of those games so that he doesn't have to dive and hurt his back again. So just keep that in mind. Something to keep an eye on. If I was a betting man, which unlike CJ Abrams, I am not, I would say that Lindor does not appear in a game during the regular season.
Yes.
I think he will appear in October. But that is not, time will tell us. As the Mets head down to Atlanta for the series of the season, very quickly, not to overshadow, the Braves took 2 out of 3 from the Marlins. Congratulations. That's exactly what they should have done. They lost the game on Friday. Brutal loss. Bounced back after that. Ozzie Albies has returned and looks really, really good. Yes. He's only hitting right-handed, which is great.
Yes. That is his better side. Matt Olson has been marvelous lately. So this offense finally starting to have some life here. We know the pitching has generally stayed pretty consistent. But we now set up this incredible series here where, while they're not tied, it's the Braves are back by 2 games. But remember, even more importantly here, this series will determine the tiebreaker. These teams, as it stands right now, are 5-5 against each other this year. So this series will not just determine, of course, the actual standings as we are running out of regular season games, but also who has the tiebreaker should they finish with identical records at the end of the regular season.
If the Mets take 2 out of 3, they will clinch a playoff berth. Okay. That does not mean that the Braves would be eliminated. That is because the Arizona Diamondbacks have become a character in this story as well. But if the Mets take 2 out of 3, they will create enough distance between them and Atlanta that the Mets will clinch a playoff spot. However, if the Braves take 2 out of 3, Atlanta would be 1 game back of the Mets with the tiebreaker. The Mets head to Milwaukee for the final series while the Braves play the capitulating Kansas City Royals. If the Braves sweep, Atlanta would be 1 game up with the tiebreaker in hand. And this crawled into my brain last night after this rousing, raucous, revelrous Mets victory. It feels like the postseason is inevitable for them, but it's really,
this series will determine everything. I mean, which is what we were hoping for. Correct. It is still razor's edge as well as they've played, and Arizona will be a factor in this, and we'll talk about them in a second. It's still going to come down to this. And obviously they're in a much better position than if they were tied, right? There is still, they've given themselves a little bit of cushion, but it is still going to be pretty dicey.
The baseball gods have shined down upon us with this series because they have rolled out each team's 3 best starting pitchers for this showdown. Tuesday night, Luis Severino against Spencer Schwellenbach. Wednesday night, David Peterson against Chris Sale. Thursday night, Sean Manaea against Max Fried. Reynaldo Lopez, who has been sensational for Atlanta this year, is on the IL and will not throw. The most interesting decision here is that the Braves have Chris Sale throwing on Wednesday. He could throw Tuesday on regular rest, which would then line him up for the final game of the regular season on Sunday. The Braves have opted not to do that. Instead, he will throw Wednesday, which makes him available for game 1 of a wild card series. If he had thrown that Sunday, he would have been unavailable for the entirety of a wild card round. This is fascinating to me because it shows that the Braves, and this is not surprising, getting in is fine, but they understand they are here to win a World Series, that those are the expectations for this franchise, and that Chris Sale throwing in the wild card round gives them the best chance to do that. What do you make of that choice, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know. Like, you could make so many different arguments in terms of lining up pitchers at this point. And again, like, teams like the Braves might, because of their situation, might be making a different decision than a team who's making their first postseason in however many years, or even you could say a team like the Mets. So I don't know. I think I agree with this, but I don't know. We were really at one game of a time at this point. So, but say, I don't know. I feel like you have to treat this series as if it's the most important series you have, the last series you have left this season. As you mentioned, we really got lucky with the pitching that has lined up for these 3 games. And that will be Tuesday through Thursday. All right. So that's the Mets and the Braves.
Atlanta's numbers against left-handed pitching are significantly better than they are against right-handed pitching by a really notable amount. And the Mets are throwing 2 lefties in the series, David Peterson, who is bad in his start over the weekend, and Sean Manaea, who's like been one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last few months. And I think those numbers are going to be even more notable considering Ozzie Albies is only hitting right-handed. And so he will get to face 2 lefties in the series.
Yes.
What do you think happens, Jordan? Give me an inkling of a prediction here.
I think the Braves are taking 2 of 3 here.
I agree with you.
And then we're really into some spicy final few days here. That's what I think is going to happen.
I got the Braves winning the first 2 and then Sean Manaea dominating Atlanta.
Wow, Manaea legacy game? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see. That is certainly the most compelling series that we have this weekend, but there's plenty more going on. And let's introduce the snakes into this conversation now, because Arizona, last week we were like, uh-oh, are the D-backs going to choke this? Are they going to slip out and the Mets and Braves are going to make it? And they go into Milwaukee facing a Brewers team who, for the first 3 games of the series, were playing as if they didn't have anything to play for. And what do I mean by that? The Brewers were the first team to clinch their division. And when we looked at both the schedule and kind of the teams ahead of them, there is kind of a human element where you could look at it and be like, well, the Brewers are awesome. What a season. But they've already clinched the division, and it seems unlikely they're going to catch up with the Phillies or Dodgers, who are both playing brilliantly, right? And so with that in mind, it was like, okay, they're kind of just locked in. Like, the division's locked up. They just want to stay healthy and kind of get to the regular season. And that's what it looked like for the first three games, whereas the D-backs are like, we got to turn this around because it's getting bad. They kicked their ass for three games and four innings, where they go up 8-0 on Sunday, and then the Brewers just storm all the way back. Not even a single home run was hit. Just dinks and dunks and gappers and walks and all kinds of stuff. And they come storming back and take the series finale. The D-backs unable to mop the Brew Crew, which leaves the Diamondbacks tied with the Mets and still three games behind the Padres, which means while it was still a good weekend for Arizona, one of the worst losses of the season, obviously you blow an 8-0 lead, and a missed opportunity here for, again, to feel a little bit better going into this final week, whereas Milwaukee, as we mentioned, they're still three, you know, four games behind LA and Philly, maybe aren't playing for anything this week, but the Pat Murphy's boys, we're gonna show some fight there on a Sunday afternoon.
As far as I'm concerned, the Milwaukee Brewers, if you're listening to this, you should just remove them from your playoff picture brain, because they are, all intents and purposes, locked into that three seed. They are playing the Mets in the final series of the year next weekend, and they have already said that their starters are going to be limited to five innings. They are a character as a foil only. So take them out of your head. The Diamondbacks, however, are very much involved. They are now going to play the Giants for three games, who have absolutely nothing to play for. Arizona lost catcher Gabriel Moreno. He left the game with the injury that he has been bugging him all season long. That's kind of a big deal. And the Snakes, I just don't know what to make of them. It was good that they showed some fight and took these games for the Brewers. I don't know, man. I'm a little worried about them, particularly if the Padres have something to play for over the weekend. Those games could get pretty spicy between Arizona and San Diego.
That's the thing, because it's possible San Diego, and we're about to get to them in a second, are going to be up by enough that it won't matter. But they do have those three games in Arizona against the Padres coming up this weekend. So right now, the Padres are three up. We'll see what that gap is in a few days because of the other series we have coming up this week.
Let's quickly talk about the Padres, who swept the White Sox. The White Sox stink. 120 losses for the Chicago White Sox. That, look, I don't know a whole lot about baseball, but that's too many. That's too many losses. I would do fewer losses than that if I was running a team. The White Sox were up late on Sunday and then just vomited the lead away.
They battled. There was like moments there where it was like, are the White Sox going to win? But Padres managed to sweep. No, they're not.
They weren't
120 losses. Yeah, they weren't. They need to win out if they want to avoid having the worst record in modern baseball history. And I don't think that's going to happen.
The Padres, for a while on Sunday, looked really good because the Dodgers were down to the Colorado Rockies. And if the Dodgers were to lose that Sunday game against the Rockies, the Padres would be just two games back in the division with a three-game set on deck this week in Los Angeles. However, the Dodgers, the Los Angeles inevitabilities, battled back against the Swiss cheese Rockies relief group, heading into the ninth inning down a run. Seth Halverson, who was pitching in the College World Series last year, rolling him out in a one-run game.
I was like, when I know he got called up recently, I was like, wait a minute, Seth Halverson, wasn't I just watching him in college baseball?
Yes, he was on the Tennessee Volunteers in 2023.
Yeah,
went from Omaha to facing Ohtani, Betts, Freeman in a one-run game in the ninth.
He didn't get to Freeman. He didn't make it.
Didn't even need to face Freeman because Ohtani, boing. Betts, see ya. Thanks for coming. Back-to-back solo shots with the Dodgers walking off. I don't want to linger on this. It's just, I love these moments where the good teams are playing bad teams. They're like, oh.
Yeah. There was another sequence. I mean, obviously the back-to-back to walk off home runs is like the dream Ohtani Betts sequence. There was another sequence earlier. I think, I don't know if it was a Friday or Saturday. And the Rockies won one of these games, by the way, which again, like, shame on the Dodgers, where it was like Ohtani four pitch walk followed by Bet's first pitch homer. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, that's why this is such a nightmare to deal with. And also, by the way, like, not disrespect to Mookie, but I mean, I talked about this a little bit when we talked about Otani last week. Like, Otani leadoff in retrospect is so obvious. It's like, yeah, it looks so much better with the left, right, left, like with everything that he's become as a leadoff hitter. It just looks so much better, but whatever. I mean, there's no bad way to do it. It's not like their lineup in the first 2 months of the season was bad, but man, oh man, I just, that those sequences were just like, yeah, this is why, even though their starting pitching continues to stink, it has been so bad, it keeps getting injured. Now they're like, oh, maybe Tony Gonsolin can give us a few innings in October. Okay, great. Like, I don't know how they're going to, it seems like Gavin Stone's not coming back. Yamamoto was not very good yesterday. I mean,
they
whatever.
Have the Otani guy.
They might be
they have the Otani guy, dude.
So I don't know, man. He had two more homers, four more steals on the weekend. He's approaching 400 total bases, which has only happened like three times this century. I he's at 53, 55. Sure. I think he probably is going to get to 60 steals. 60 homers, we'll see. But oh my gosh. So anyway, okay. Dodgers still, they lost the game to the Rockies and the Padres did gain ground. So now they are three back going to Dodger Stadium. So that will be absolutely delicious.
Yes. And the Dodgers have not announced their starting pitching for the series because it might be me and you and your
no,
family
I actually,
members.
I think they did today. I think they,
okay.
I'm pretty sure I saw, but I think you actually got it correct. So let me pull it up.
Okay. Quickly,
because I know you do care a lot about it. Here we go. Pitching probables. So maybe they haven't announced them because I see the same thing that you see, which is Michael King versus Landon Knack Tuesday, Dylan Cease versus Jack Flaherty Wednesday, and Joe Musgrove versus Walker Buehler, who again was not awesome against the Rockies on Thursday. So advantage San Diego, although I'm pretty sure that would be the case pretty much however you lined it up at this point in terms of starting pitching.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. The Padres have control their own destiny. If they win these three games, they tie it up with the Dodgers and have the tiebreaker. Like, are the Padres going to roll into Dodger Stadium and take three? I don't think so.
Maybe.
Worth watching maybe. The games. That's what's going on in the National League. I am so excited. Like, the Braves, Mets, Dodgers, Padres are must-see TV this week. Make sure you tune in for those. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about the American League, which is somehow even wonkier. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's do the American League. We're great Americans. We're average Americans. You know who's a great American? Gerrit Cole. Let's get the obvious out of the way. The Yankees sweep the Oakland Athletics at the Coliseum. Gerrit Cole throws nine innings on Friday. His first start after he threw up the four and told Rafi Devers he wasn't interested in competing. He, I think, made a point on Friday night that reports of his demise and softness were greatly overstated.
Yes, he did not throw up the four for Lawrence Butler.
He threw up the nine.
Can I just say, yeah, the nine inning no decision. Although the Devers decision also looks even weirder now, knowing that Devers has just been hurt and terrible in like every other context for the last month. But whatever. Moving that aside, Gerrit Cole is awesome. Nine innings. Him going nine innings is obviously impressive. The Yankees offense was asleep for pretty much that whole first game and then absolutely exploded on Saturday and Sunday, put up a bunch of runs, I believe three or four homers in both of those games. Aaron Judge is up to 55 home runs, which is very good. We got a Dominguez homer. We got a Gleyber homer. We got all the whole lineup is contributing except for Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo is very bad right now. It's not their biggest issue. So again, just mentioning that I not the biggest issue, but like he's back and he's not good.
Okay.
Aaron Judge though is good. I mean, the most encouraging, listen, the A's right now, they had some spunk in them. They're not a good baseball team. So they took care of business here. Good for the Yankees.
The Yankees are going to win the division at some point this week. They are not necessarily a character as far as I'm concerned for the last two series of the regular season. Like they'll win one of these games against the Orioles coming up. That series has kind of lost a little bit of juice in my mind.
No, absolutely.
Just because of how the results have happened. And let's
a five-game gap, right? So
five-game gap. It's just not as compelling as it could have been. And that is because the Orioles.
Six games.
Win a series against a competent team. They lose to the Tigers. They beat them on Friday night. And it's like, oh, the O's are back. It felt back.
Yeah. And they Especially after the walk-off day before. Yeah.
They bungle it on Saturday. Oh. And that was, I don't want to talk about specifics. Then they lose the Sunday game to Detroit.
Really bad. It was really bad. They had second and third with nobody out in a tie game, and they could not score that winning run, and then ultimately lose in extras.
The Orioles have a pretty firm lead, however, on the AL wild card, that top spot. They're four games up. They will, unless they really screw this pooch, it'd be very hard. They will host that wild card series. So let's take the Orioles and the Yankees, move them to the side.
Hold on. Tigers. Oh, I guess we'll talk about the Tigers too in relation to this, even though we just moved past their series. So sorry, Tigers. We'll get back to you in a second.
The American League Central. Our sincerest apologies. I thought you were boring. You are not.
Just look at these standings. I mean, aesthetically.
Gander at them. Gaze at them.
This is one of the more incredible just standings I've ever seen. Let's actually handle the Guardians here quickly, because they're your champions. We have not talked about them very much over the last week, and that's because
you talk about them all the time. What are you talking about?
I generally don't feel like we have actually hit on the fact that they just won the division. This division that has turned into a way more competitive division than we thought, and they ended up winning it fairly comfortably. There were some moments of panic there at the end of August. They course corrected. They handled things brilliantly, and now they have won the division. So now they get to relatively chill, assuming they don't, you know, lose a couple games against the Reds and the Astros heat up. They are in very, very good shape to get the 2 seed. If not, maybe still the 1 seed, but very likely at least a bye. So congratulations to Cleveland. I know they lost 2 or 3 in St. Louis, but they earned it. Like, there is a lot of things going. Jose Ramirez going for 40-40. Good for Cleveland. Like, I just want to, like, no, seriously, because
I understand.
The fact that we have three other good teams in this division, and Cleveland ended up winning it by maybe 6 or 7 games is not a small thing. So I need to.
Congratulations to the Cleveland Guardians. Now, for the next week, get out of my brain.
That's fine. That's why I'm pushing them out of the way. Okay, let's get back to the fun stuff, which is
here's where we're at.
Kansas City and Minnesota. Yes.
Here's where we're at. Okay. The Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals have the same exact record right now. The Minnesota Twins are one game behind those two teams, and the Seattle Mariners are 2 games behind those two teams. The Royals have the tiebreaker over the Tigers. They are currently still slotted in as the 5 seed. The Royals, however, have lost 7 baseball matches in a row. That is bad. The only reason that they are clinging to a postseason spot is that the Minnesota Twins have been similarly embarrassing as of late. They were swept in a doubleheader on Sunday against the Boston Red Sox. Tristan Casas hit 3 home runs in that first game. Good for him. And so we have a situation where besides the Tigers, nobody seems to want the final wild card spot. The Royals were swept by the Giants at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
here are some numbers for you. The Kansas City Royals, since August 29th, which is like the day before I think Vinny got hurt. So they won 3 of 4 in Cleveland. I was like, oh man, here come the Royals. This team's going to the playoffs.
You were there for those, right?
Since I was there for those. They lost that last game. I believe got walked off, or at least a late loss. And then they went to Houston. They had a 7-game losing streak then, and then they sort of bounced back, swept the Twins during this, which again speaks to where the Twins are, and then have now gone on another 7-game losing streak. Since August 29th, the Kansas City Royals are hitting 202, 270, 306. That is a 60 WRC plus, which is by far the worst in baseball. Yes, worse than the White Sox comfortably. Okay, that is over 22 games. And by the way, the Twins are 28th in WRC+ over the stretch, and they're way worse than them. So both of these teams have been hitting like the White Sox for 3 weeks, which is why they are both just I mean, backing their way potentially into the postseason doesn't even do it justice. I mean, this Royals lineup since Vinny went out has just been an atrocity. Bobby Witts Jr. is doing his best. Yuli Gurriel showed up. He's 40 years old. He's trying his best. He's not a problem. Tommy Pham is hitting leadoff. But everything else has just been so bad. And the pitching has remained very good. Seth Lugo was awesome again yesterday. And it doesn't matter if you cannot score runs. And that has been the case for the Royals over the last 3 weeks. And it might cost them.
The Tigers, however, they are looking good. One of the catches of the season with Parker Meadows robbing a home run. Did you see this play?
I did. He's now robbed both of our teams of his two home run robberies are against the Mariners and Orioles.
Oh, dude, there I think he has way more than that. Like the thing with Parker Meadows and home run robberies, there are not a lot of 6'5" center fielders. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, he is able to straight up rob balls that other people cannot even remotely like reach. Yep. And so he's just going to have so many of these over his career. Like he's 12 years old and he's been incredible. He is really developed into something special. The Tigers this week head home to play Tampa.
Yep. And then they have the White Sox.
And that is a very important note because right now it feels impossible to see the Royals or the Twins getting hot enough to pass the Tigers if the Tigers get to play the White Sox three times. Again, wilder things have happened, but still, the White Sox stink.
Oh,
the other character here that requires a mention are your Seattle Mariners, who sit two games back of the Royals and Tigers.
Yeah.
They had it in their grasp up big on Sunday.
5-0. Yep.
5-0, and they fumble the chili against the Rangers and find a way to lose that game. Defeat from the clutches of victory, and they are now two games out of a playoff berth. And again, I don't know the tiebreakers by heart.
They don't have them.
Do not have them.
Oh, although actually, you know, I haven't even thought about checking their record against Kansas City. So Kansas City and them are tied in a tiebreaker. So there'd be additional tiebreakers, which we'll get to if we have to cost them. But I guess that does become sort of relevant, although we'll cross over when we get there. The point is, the Rangers just looked lifeless, really embarrassing showing for the first couple games. Max Scherzer gets scratched in what is probably his last start as a Ranger. So that was unfortunate. They beat Dane Dunning. They beat DeGrom. And then on Sunday, they had it. They had won 20 consecutive games when scoring at least 5 runs, and they managed to lose this one. Now, however, they now go to Houston, which is good news and bad news. The bad news is that they are 5 games back of Houston, which is a bigger gap than they probably would have hoped before heading to play the Astros. The good news is they are not technically eliminated yet, and the Astros did lose on Sunday as well in fairly embarrassing fashion against the Angels. So it's kind of the same thing as what you mentioned with the Orioles and the Yankees. The Astros will, in all likelihood, win at least one of these games and clinch the AL West, at which point it will be all about the Mariners scoreboard watching with Detroit and Minnesota and Kansas City. The Mariners have these 3 games at Houston and then go home to play Oakland. And obviously Oakland, at least recently, have been less of a tough task than they were, you know, a month and a half or so ago. So the schedule is somewhat in Seattle's favor there, but not relative to the Tigers. And it is still going to require Minnesota and Kansas City to continue to play very poorly. What I expect to happen is they will be eliminated on the final weekend for the 5th time in the last 10 years, which I don't think anybody else can say. So that seems like what this is heading for. But hey, Julio looks amazing. It's been fun to watch him recently. But, you know, too little too late, as we've been kind of saying about them for a few weeks now.
Jordan, how do you think this shakes out in the American League?
Man, I mean, with the schedule, now I am kind of just looking at the Tigers as a really likely. I mean, the Rays are not necessarily the team you want to see at this stage.
But all 3 of the teams, I'm just going to remove the Mariners respectfully for now.
That's fine.
The Tigers have 3 against the White Sox. The Royals have 3 against the Nationals. And the Twins have 3 against the Marlins.
Yep.
Now, there is a difference, as we have learned all year, between the White Sox and normal bad teams. Yes. Okay, I get that. The Marlins showed a good amount of spunk in their series against the Dodgers and the Braves. Yeah. I know they only won 1 game in each of the series, but it's a great point.
It's a great point, though, that all these 3 teams is it's right there for. And again, if you want to include the Mariners with Oakland at the end of the schedule, that's part of it too. So it's right. It's in that sense, that's kind of what we're betting on here. But man, I mean, Kansas City, you got a winless final homestand. Like, I don't know. Like, Minnesota had this miracle win on Friday in 12 innings where they just like exhausted literally every pitcher they had, managed to win. And then Pablo Lopez gets crushed on Sunday. I'm like, what am I supposed to make of that? I don't know, like Kansas City or Minnesota, because right now I'm looking at it like Detroit, what's not to love? Like, they're clearly going to make it, which still seems ridiculous to say when you consider their pitching strategy going forward. But I don't know. I'm done making predictions. We've said far too many times on the show, well, this is probably what this matchup is going to be. Okay, let's be glad we have no idea what's going to happen.
So I am going to say I think the Royals get it. And the reason I think that is they have Cole Reagans going twice.
Mm.
Throwing tomorrow night against the Nationals, which means he would then throw on Sunday in the final game of the year in Atlanta.
Yeah.
If we're looking for any tiny advantage at all anywhere, having Reagans starting twice seems pretty helpful. Do the Tigers have Scooble going twice? Let me quickly take a look.
Well, he's going today or tomorrow, right? It would be Tuesday or Sunday. Yeah.
So I should shut up.
That's another thing. Orioles lost a series against not Scooble, which was tough.
So Scooble, Scooble will throw tomorrow.
Tuesday and Sunday,
and then Sunday. And if we take a look at the Twins, who also have a Scooble Reagans, and his name is Pablo.
But he just started on Sunday, so that would only be one more time. Sunday. Yeah. So, and he got crushed. So who knows with them? I agree. I think I like your logic here. Here's the last thing I'll say about this, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about CJ Abrams and David Bell. Two very different topics. I mean, I've been saying that we kind of hinted at earlier. I don't know what exactly has to happen for this to work out, but if we could somehow end up with a Braves Royals essentially play-in game for two different leagues, would really be, or at least a play-in series, that's kind of setting up that way almost no matter what. But I guess it depends on if the Mets kick the Braves' ass this week. But that is that interleague matchup. We always have a couple of in that last weekend, and that is really setting up for about as juicy of a random interleague showing that we could really get. So we'll see by the time we arrive on Friday, if that is still looking as good as it does right now. But I mean, with the way these Royals are playing, they have to beat the Nats. Oh my gosh. I know they're going on the road here, but have to do it.
They need Vinny to go up there swinging with one arm like he's a dad playing wiffle ball on
just
the beach.
Just go draw some walks, Vinny. Go get up there and like wave the bat around.
Lie.
Yeah.
Say you're fine. Just don't swing, dude.
All right, let's take a break. And when we return, we have three more series we have not touched on yet. And then we'll look ahead to the week. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, so we'll
welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. The Rays swept the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any hope for Toronto finishing fourth place? It's not happening. Sorry, Blue Jays.
But you don't get relegated because we don't do that here. The Cubs took 3 out of 4 over the Nationals, but it felt like more. The big story from this one, Nationals all-star shortstop, CJ Abrams, optioned to low A West Palm Beach.
Optioned to a team that's not playing games anymore. I mean, the minor league season is over. So this is not like, all right, go work on some things. This is you're in timeout because you were in the casino until 8 a.m. is the reports. I don't know if we've totally verified this, but either way, that seems like probably more time in the casino than you would probably want.
Look. Let's boot up the multiple things that are true horn, Jordan.
Let's do it.
On the scale of morality, gambling until 8 a.m. is relatively fine. Like, there are baseball players are doing worse things than this with their free time
And by the way, baseball players are also spending time in the casino.
All the time.
Late at night. That's happening.
All the time.
8 a.m.?
All the time.
That's where you have some issues. But, like, do not think that he is unique for spending time in the casino. So let's just put that out there. Okay.
Like, that's the picture of him at the roulette table which is funny. Also, roulette. Yeah.
I like roulette.
Again, not that I've spent too much time casino, but when I you know,
roulette at 8 a.m.
It's one thing, right? Roulette. It's right. Like you're playing hold'em all night long, and you feel like you're on a roll. Okay, roulette feels dangerous. Okay. We don't know anything about casino games. Anyway, the point is, if he's there till 8 a.m. before a day game, that's not great.
I enjoy a craps table. Okay. A couple things. 8 a.m. is bonkers. Like, the way someone in baseball described it to me, 8 a.m. is 4 hours from 4 a.m. And 4 a.m. is probably too late, right? And so if we're breakfast betting, that's not ideal.
If we're taking 8 a.m. as fact, and we understand that it was a day game the next day, I mean... Report
he'd
time
be at the
is
yard
like
at 10.
Right?
He's rolling
Did he nap?
Now,
are we going straight from the casino?
Maybe he woke up at 6:30 and had a coffee and got some morning gambling in.
Oh, interesting. You think he actually that's just an interesting different narrative.
I don't think that's true.
No, I know, but is that better or worse? It's probably more of a sign of gambling addiction if you're waking up early.
No, but you slept.
Yeah, if we're talking about readiness for the next day, that's probably better.
Yeah.
But come on, waking up to go to the casino at 8 a.m.?
What's the difference between that and me playing the spelling bee on the New York Times app on my phone in the morning while I drink my coffee? None. Next point I want to make here. My understanding is that this is not the first time that this has been a problem for this specific player. And so the way that the Nats responded by banishing him publicly was a choice that must have been brought on by previous information or previous instances of this happening. Maybe not this specifically. And here's what I mean by that, right? Here's what the Nats could have done. Hey, you're going to sit today. We're going to find you privately and internally, right? By optioning him, they make this a public story. They embarrass him. Now, there might be value to that if this is a real problem and they want to let him know that his actions are not acceptable, right? However, the Nats are kind of an old school group between Mike Rizzo and David Martinez. And they have done things like this in the past, like when they just DFA'd Sean Kelly. Remember that for when he threw his glove down?
And they optioned Luis Garcia last year, when it wasn't necessarily a performance. But
so yeah. I would be surprised if they punished him this publicly, this significantly for a first time offense.
Sure.
Like this. That's just my read on the situation.
I don't disagree. I guess the only thing I would say is like, the report was out there. So I guess to your point is even if we all knew what seemingly happened, if the report was confirmed, they didn't have to verify it. They could have, as you mentioned, sat him and then brought him back, fined him, whatever, internally said, we're not going to discuss that, and then moved on and played him the rest of the year.
Yeah.
That would have been the other way to handle that. Yeah. So
then we're not talking about it on the podcast.
Yeah. Probably. Well.
We're probably not. Like,
not
if they
about it for this long.
A guy, you're basically putting him in timeout for the rest of the year. This is a dude who your all-star.
Yeah.
And like, still is been a playing huge piece of your team moving forward. Yeah. And so
absolutely.
I'm very interested to see how the relationship between player and team continues. Yeah. Last thing to talk about.
Yes.
At least they didn't fire CJ Abrams like the Reds did with David Bell. Even though the Reds took 2 out of 3 over the weekend, Skeens was amazing on Sunday. He'll win the NL Rookie of the Year. I've been saying it. Told you. I'm going to tell Russ Dorsey a thousand times.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like, if you vote for Jackson Merrill, I respect you. He's great. I wouldn't do it. So that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Paul Skeens has a 1.99 ERA?
Yeah. I just think Paul Skeens is like maybe the third best pitcher on the planet. And anyway. Yeah. The Reds fired David Bell.
Jordan, you have spent a lot of time around David Bell over the last couple of years as someone who was going to Cincinnati all the time.
I was ready to spend more time with him tomorrow.
Yeah.
the Reds are coming to Cleveland. I was looking forward to saying, hey, David, how are things? Oh, not going to be able to do that.
So my sense that I've gotten from you about David Bell is that he has been unoffensive as a manager of the Reds. but that he is not exactly adding immense value in an obvious way, as is the case. Like, you watch Skip Schumacher manage, or you watch Alex Cora do his job, and you're like, that guy's good at this. David Bell was more of a quieter, steadier energy.
Certainly when he wasn't being ejected. So that is when you would see David Bell show some fire, because he had some pretty epic ejections over his 6-year tenure. But in terms of anything he would ever say publicly, it was as, you know, straight and narrow as you could get. It was never too high, never too low, to a degree of cliche that is not totally uncommon, but felt pretty extreme, even last year amidst an unbelievable summer, which earned him an extension through 2026 when the Reds had this amazing June, amazing July. Here we go. Here come the Reds. They were still mathematically alive on the last week of the season last year, even after they had tailed off. And we felt like there was momentum coming into this year, not guaranteeing that they were going to make the postseason, but it was like, listen, in this division, with this young talent, there should be a step forward that should be taken. And that did not happen, not even close. Now, you could say it wasn't David Bell's fault. That's totally reasonable. They had a ton of injuries on offense in the first half and then on the pitching side in the second half. But David Bell just didn't win very much in 6 years in Cincinnati. They made the postseason once in 2020. They didn't score any runs in the two postseason games that they played in 2020. They have not made the postseason since. And as we mentioned last week, this is a team that has not made a postseason, won a postseason series since 1995. And ultimately, as we learned with Seattle, and in many other cases, the manager is the one that goes before the front office. And for Nick Kroll, who has been with the Reds for 20 years, but has been in charge for basically about as long as David Bell has been in charge since 2018, this is Nick Kroll deciding, I am going to change something up here and see if that changes something instead of, you know, me being at risk. And I imagine ownership, who, as many people in Cincinnati pointed out, did not even... The fact that ownership did not even put anything out in their Sunday night news dump of firing David Bell, maybe that changes at some point this week, is pretty embarrassing. And obviously, most Reds fans are more pissed at ownership than at David Bell. But when you don't win very much over
produce.
6 years, yeah,
too
when
busy you're, selling when produce,
you're,
the owners.
When you don't win very much in six seasons for a team that has been so desperate to get back to relevance, as we mentioned, this has been one of the least relevant teams of the 21st century. This is a way to show some sort of urgency. Now, when you spin this forward, it's an interesting job. I think there are a lot of appealing things about this job. It's pretty fun to win in Cincinnati when you're winning. We saw that last year. This roster does not suck. This pitching could be really good next season. And there's still some things on the farm coming. Rhett Lauder's been awesome. But you're still talking about one of the least enviable ownership situations in the entire league. But I think that it is way more likely that someone thinks they can take on this challenge than the very specific person it is going to take the White Sox job, right? Because you know what you're signing up for the White Sox is a long-term thing. It's not hard to imagine someone looking at this Reds job and being like, yeah, I can win here next year. And so that's what's going to be really interesting about who they target. I mean, Skip Schumacher obviously comes up. He played his last 2 years in Cincinnati. Maybe this is the kind of team in the way that he kind of guided a young Marlins team to success. We'll see. Are the Reds going to be able to outbid someone else for Skip? We'll see
Skip
who else they're
competing
with.
He's managing my Harlem Hellfighters next year. I already got him on.
Okay. All right. If you can outbid the Reds, very possible. So it'll be really interesting to see who they target with this next move. But that's what's fascinating here. If we move past Bell, it's not a bad job. There's some real challenges. It's going to be an interesting offseason ahead. The pressure's definitely on. But this is a place that some person will look at this and be like, I can definitely win with this group. And so that's what's going to be fun to see what direction they turn.
There will be at least one other open job, I think, this winter.
Yeah.
And so we will get to the carousel when the carousel begins.
Yes.
George Schusterman, that is the podcast. There is the podcast. So much good baseball going on the next few days. Not really tonight. Monday night, I guess Mariners, Astros are playing. Yeah. The Phillies
can clinch the division tonight. So,
yeah,
you know,
Phillies too. However, starting tomorrow, Mets, Braves, lock in. Padres, Dodgers, lock in. Angels, White Sox, lock in
again.
Again. They should play on all the October off days for our enjoyment. Jordan, thank you for doing a podcast with me. Andrew Hartz, thank you to you for producing. We will be back on Wednesday with more audio content in your ear holes. A lot of fun emails. I kind of want to read some of them on Wednesday if we don't get too much sauce in the results. Anything left for you, my friend, before we bid everyone adieu?
As you mentioned, thank you, Hearts. As you mentioned, you can email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. We have all kinds of fun stuff coming up this October. Can't wait for the postseason, but this week is going to be delightful. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.
I need to go book some Detroit hotels.